It is opening day. I appreciate everyone checking out the podcast. If you are listening past opening day, some of this information will still apply for the weekend. We talked about team by team, their schedules for hitters, talked about streamers, watch lists, waiver wire for week one, all the above. So I appreciate you listening. I do want to say I apologize for the audio. My microphone was not connected, so the stream was a little echoey, not as easy or crisp as this would be. So thank you for listening anyway if you do. And going forward, I'll be more diligent to make sure we don't have that issue again. So again, episode 192, Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast is live. It is a YouTube stream. So if you want to check out the YouTube, it's youtube.com/@GTEFantasy, where you can watch the video. Again, apologies for the audio. But before we get started, a word from our sponsor, Prediction Strike. Do you wish you could have had stock in guys like Aaron Judge or Paul Goldschmidt? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. It's like Robinhood and DraftKings had a baby. Sandy Alcantara is up 149% over the last year, and investors are making a killing. Prediction Strike lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game. Don't just draft your favorite players, start investing in them. Simply download Prediction Strike's new and easy-to-use app from the App Store or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use code GTE, then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would real stocks. The value of players will change based upon game performance and supply and demand, and you can trade your shares of players at any time, as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Sign up with promo code GTE to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more.
They're walking him with the bases loaded, an intentional walk to Barry Bonds.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way!
It's opening day. We are here. All of our hard work, we are about to find out if it pays off, but it's honestly just begun because now we get 6 months of baseball. The fantasy baseball grind is happening. We have lineups rolling out soon enough, but until they do, I'm full on opening day vibes here. That's what this is going on here. But it's a celebration. It's a party. We're going to do it right. However, we're going to talk about some streamers for the week, for the day, some waiver wire, which kind of goes hand in hand with streamers, to be honest, because the way I look at streamers, especially hitting on the hitting side of things, most of these guys are available in your league. And I play in deeper formats, so all these names are going to be more like what I would call watchlist warriors, so to speak, because you can kind of add them to your watchlist and see how they do for your shallower formats. For those hopping in on YouTube, I appreciate it. For those listening to the replay on podcast, it's youtube.com/@GTEFantasy. You can drop your questions. And I will get to them, especially start sit stuff, waiver wire, et cetera. So today we're talking waiver wire, we're talking all that stuff. And the way I do this usually, like when I start streaming, I do this. I go to Fangraphs and I look at the probables grid. What it does is gives me the starting pitchers, probable starting pitchers about a week out. And then I start looking at what teams have matchups. I look at weekly matchups and then I start figuring out, like, for instance, this week you have the White Sox, the Guardians, the Astros, Miami, Mets, Arizona, Colorado, Dodgers, and Padres playing four games, especially in the short, if you play a shorter week, Thursday through Sunday, they have four games compared to everybody else having three. So right there, that's where you start. If you can find a way to utilize that edge, that's a way to start. And then you look for names there. So for instance, if you're in a shallower league, Elvis Andrews, I know they are facing at least one lefty. But it's a tougher, you know, it's a tougher matchup. So although they have four games there, it's a tougher matchup. It's still a bit riskier to start him, just given, I know Andrews showed success last year late with Chicago, but that's just a name to think about. You have them playing Seattle. Seattle has righty-lefty. So 2-2. So for Cleveland, this makes you think the other way. First baseman, Josh Naylor, one of my favorite guys, one of my most attractive first basemen this year. Do you sit him do you just start him this week, these four games, and just see how it works? Or do you think maybe, because they did platoon at times last year against lefties, will Naylor platoon one of those two games? Will he come in late in the game to bat against a righty? There's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts. And so it's like, don't overthink it with a Josh Naylor type. I would be starting him. I am starting him without much thought. But that's where I go with when I start thinking about these things. I look at matchups and I look at the short week and I'm trying to get an advantage here.
For Houston, we have no idea how they're going to do it. Yes, they have four righties on the to be facing this week. I don't know. This is more wait and see with Houston. Obviously, Hensley's a name everyone likes, but I think Dubon's going to be starting in second base. So, and we'll get an answer on that shortly. But they're facing all righties, so maybe there won't be so much platoon mess. But it's going to be overall just a mess. When it comes to Seattle, a guy like depending on if JP Crawford's available. If not, then you have Sam Haggerty, who could be interesting in a 4-game week. He has some speed upside, a little bit of pop, and playing time if Crawford isn't ready to play. So, and that's a deep cut, obviously. I'm trying to think for like a shallower league. Colton Wong should play plenty back towards the top of the lineup. And against Cleveland, four righties, Wong being a lefty and a guy who's been batting at the top of the lineup all spring, Colton Wong becomes a great streaming option and someone you could pick up if need be in a shallower format, especially if you want speed and batting average. That's kind of your guy. And some runs because he's going to be batting at the top of the order. With Miami, the Mets, just a tough matchup. I mean, if you're like Scherzer, Peterson, people might be sleeping on a little bit. He's a great streaming option for pitchers. I don't do much of the pitcher streamer stuff, but Peterson fits that mold very well, especially against a Miami lineup that isn't expected to be overly strong. Kodai Senga, Verlander, Marlins hitters, not only is there a question in terms of playing time, you get one lefty in here, but it's a matter of really tough matchups. I wouldn't be looking to stream Miami hitters this week at all. So again, that's what we're going through. We're just looking at this is how I go about my process, and this is where we're starting. And then the Mets, the other way around, they're facing lefty righty, so it's a mess. Vogelbach isn't a great starter either as fam because I think that those two are going to platoon at DH, so both of them are going to be limited in their playing time this week. But other than that, I mean, I think Escobar is going to play every day at their base. He's going to have a long leash, and two lefties does bode well for him. So I think Escobar could be an interesting streamer, but not a guy I'd go out adding in shallower formats. Brett Beatty is a stash here. If you want to talk about, if we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, and kind of, I think waiver wire is going to weave its way in and out of these conversations. I think Brett Beatty's obviously a stash candidate. I think you should be making a point to stash him if you can. He will be 12-team relevant even once he is up. That power is difference-making, or potentially difference-making, I should say, considering how power can be in third base. We all know is a shallower position, but it gets like it's shallow at the top and then it gets kind of like whatever deepish in the middle, like just kind of similar skill sets. I think Beatty can slot into that middle tier. Let's see, other four teams. So you have the Diamondbacks. Jeez, the Diamondbacks facing the Dodgers. That's what happened. Diamondbacks facing the Dodgers, and you're just looking at these matchups for the week. Four of them. Let's see, lefty righty again. So we might see a little bit more Longoria than we anticipate with the two lefties even today. Maybe we get a third game with Longoria and they're just slid in there. But for the most part, maybe we see Kyle Lewis. This week, we're going to have to watch Alec Thomas and McCarthy today. I think one of those two could sit day one. It wouldn't be a surprise. I think Carroll's going to play mostly every day unless he proves he can't hit lefties, but I don't see him sitting. So I really do think McCarthy and Thomas will be the guys who get stuck sitting against lefties, tougher lefties at that. So we will see how that is handled today. And if lineups, I mean, we're not going to get a lineup for that game till later, but if lineups roll out, I will be talking about some of them. We have one lineup so far with the Twins, and that's it, which actually plays into this. So now that we've covered this, we still have Colorado and San Diego. And then so the Dodgers. Let's talk about the Dodgers because they're getting 1, 2, 3 out of four righties. So the Dodgers, 3 out of 4 righties, that should be a James Outman week. I think Outman's going to be playing strong side platoon. Trace Thompson's going to be weak side. I know roster resource doesn't show that, but that's my opinion and take on the situation. I think we're going to see James Outman becomes a very intriguing waiver wire claim as well for power because the dude can mash. The thing about Outman is there's a little swing and miss to his game, but he had over 30 home runs last year in the minors, and the power is undeniable. The ISOs were over well north of 200, and he just every level he hit for power. That wasn't the question. So if you're looking for power outfield, he could be a little bit of a boost to your lineup, but it is no guarantee considering that they have Hayward and other options. I just like Outman. I don't think they kept him up with two options along with the other outfielders to sit him on the bench and not play him regularly versus righties at least to start the season. And then you have, we talked about this, Arizona. Oh, I am curious to see if what's-his-face plays every day and leads off. Josh Rojas. He was leading off towards the end of spring. We've seen him lead off with this team before. Talked about it a little bit last episode, 2 days ago. So Rojas, the guy, we're kind of just watching to see how he falls into this lineup. And Lourdes Gurriel Jr. I think Gurriel is going to end up batting third in this lineup and be a really solid contributor that's kind of just set him and forget him type. Very boring, very just a high floor, a guy that we kind of overlook. Gurriel becomes – he's fringe 12 team because he doesn't really have a over-the-top skill set in terms of like a flashy skill set. But batting average, RBIs, if he's batting third in this lineup, some of those stats that people kind of overlook, I think Gurriel can slide in and help with. But other than that – sorry, water break. Other than that, that's going to – the Diamondbacks are just – just, I mean, they're fun, but there's just a lot of quirks. Like, again, we're watching McCarthy's lineup spot, all that good stuff. The Dodgers against the, sorry, the Rockies against the Padres. I'm curious to see how Montero gets utilized. Montero should start day one against that lefty. And then they don't have the hardest schedule. So the Rockies, although they are not home either. So, you know, the Rockies on the road usually struggle, but they've been, all spring has been on the road. They don't have to go home and adjust and get to see home pitching first. So maybe they come out the gates a little bit hotter than expected. This is speculation. I can't prove this. So this is where I'm at with it, however. But at the end of the day, the Rockies do have an interesting matchup. So they have four games. The Padres pitching isn't, you know, Snell's great, but Martinez hit or miss. Waka can be hit or miss. Lugo kind of TBD. We'll see how that goes. So if you're looking, like, I think Elias Montero becomes an interesting streamer this week and somebody you're watching in 12s. 15s, he's rostered, but 12s, he's a guy you're on your watch list. You're not adding him unless he gets that usage. Other than that, on the Dodgers, Padres, wrong teams, on the Rockies, you have Mike Moustakas. We're watching to see how he's utilized. They have three righties this week. Does he get run? That becomes a question we want to answer there. The other way around, Padres. And on top of that, there's inclement weather. Like, the game was already pushed back to like 9:40 tonight. So if they might even lose a game, so that kind of takes away the appeal of streaming this matchup altogether. Maybe it's more of a pitcher, but even if you stream pitchers, you're kind of in trouble because of the weather. But a pitcher I like in this matchup is Waka on Saturday. I think Waka at home against Colorado is a really nice little stream. He's most recent teamers. He is already rostered. However, in 12s, he could be a nice streamer. The issue here is, I'm not touching any of these pitchers. You will not see me ever roster Austin Gomber because there's a reason in the fantasy community we call it getting gombered. So Gomber is a verb. You don't want to start a guy. Nothing like a 9 a.m. bucket hat. Let's go. Yeah, it's opening day vibes here, man. Thanks for the Baseball Money's Fake. Good dude over there running that show. Check it out. But yeah, 9 a.m. bucket hat, pink glasses. This is the Florida man slash, because I'm from Florida, Florida man vibes. / opening day vibes. This is what we do. I can take the same outfit and go cut the grass in it. That's what I usually actually cut the grass in these. Anyway, back to this. So other than that, we can get out of these names. So if you're in a pinch, two righties, two lefties, I do think we see a lot of Nelson Cruz this week. Not saying it's a good, I don't think it's going to be necessarily a great production output, but two lefties plays in his favor. Cruz is a guy that's going to bat towards the middle of this lineup, probably fourth versus lefties, maybe closer to sixth versus righties. And then vice versa, Carpenter will bat against in the middle of the order against righties. But I don't know how much he's going to play, if at all, against lefties. So that could just be a natural platoon. We'll see how they figure out the outfield situation, because that's really what it comes down to, who gets those outfield reps come day one. So obviously we'll get more answers on that. I'm still waiting to see. No lineups have dropped from where I'm looking. So hopefully by the end of the stream, some will. But if not, we will just talk about the one lineup that's available for us to discuss. And let's talk about other options. I can go team by team, actually. I have most of the stuff memorized. So they're playing. So Baltimore's playing Boston. Boston having two righties and a lefty. There's not really anybody there for Baltimore I'm interested in. Maybe see how Kyle Stowers is utilized this week. Two righties, he could platoon against both. So in a daily league, Stowers could be interesting because he has some power upside. And Baltimore doesn't have the Kluber kind of I'm interested in. I would say I have no problem streaming against Kluber this week. It's this Chris Sale looked wicked his last outing. And Tanner Houck has that type of upside to be solid. So I'm not overly I'm not confident in Houck necessarily. So I think two out of three games you could stream Baltimore hitters. However, on the flip side of this matchup, you have Boston facing Baltimore, and you gotta love what you see here. If you Tristan Casas, if he's somehow available in 12s, 10s, he becomes an interesting target, at least for the two games, because he probably will sit this one. Although they sent down Bobby Dalbec, so I wonder if Casas is kind of set for a more regular role. I expected Dalbec and Casas to kind of platoon, but maybe they're going to see what they have in the young kid in Casas and let him play on a regular basis. So Casas is a guy that becomes a lot more intriguing with Dalbec out of the picture, even though they have Connor Wong and stuff who can factor in. Dalbec was kind of my main concern because Dalbec crushes lefties. Casas had a really strong spring, hits righties well, and lefty-righty, kind of the bats being lefty and righty respectively. I thought those two could platoon. Again, that was Tristan Casas and Dalbec, but again, not in the cards to start the year because Dalbec is in the minors. The Yankees get the Giants, already get interleague play day one. Love to see it. Bunch of righties on the roster here. And a guy that I think is going to play every day, at least to start, is going to be Oswaldo Peraza. I think he deserves – he's a 15-teamer guy, another fringe 12. But I think he's actually somebody, if you're in a five outfield league and a 12-teamer, Peraza's a guy I would go ahead and roster. I think Peraza's going to play every day and eventually earn his way over Hicks, especially with major returns. I know they love Hicks for whatever reason, but everyone sees the writing on the wall. Hicks is not good anymore. I know Hicks is the lefty. I think it's Cabrera. I'm going to look it up. I should know this. Like I actually have Cabrera roster on quite a number of teams, so I should probably know if he's a lefty or righty. I feel like he's a righty. That's why I'm saying this, but we'll find out here in a second. And Cabrera also, he's a righty. Oh, no, he's a switch hitter. I know. See, I saw him hit righty in the spring. He's a switch hitter, so even better. No reason why he would be stuck in a platoon. And we saw Cabrera play right field, left field, shortstop, first base, second base, and third base last year at six positions. If a player can play six positions, they're going to play just about every day. Him, LeMahieu, they're going to factor in all over the field. Play plenty. I don't have any concerns about Cabrera's playing time, although some might. I think there's a very fantasy viable skill set. Now Cabrera will be batting towards the bottom third of the lineup most likely most days. Injuries, days off will bump him up. But him and Anthony Volpe will be batting in the bottom third of this lineup. And the Yankees suddenly have a very strong, deep lineup. As long as the Yankees are healthy, this is one of the most dangerous and potent lineups in baseball, especially if Cabrera can pick up where he left off in spring and what we saw parts of last year, and Volpe picks up where he left off in spring as well, batting ninth. Although, so keep that in mind, Volpe will bat ninth. He should be rostered in every type of format. So if you are in a shallow league and Volpe is available, make a point to get him on your bench because there are very few players with more upside for fantasy this season. And Volpe, the price flew up late in drafts. But again, that leaves him probably available in a wide range of leagues. See, this is what the problem is. If you don't have a middle infield spot to play in that shallow format, he's probably still a bench player, at least worthy of a bench bat, because in that type of format where you think you don't have space for him, he's worth the upside alone. He's worth having on your bench to see if he pops, because if Volpe pops, he will move up that lineup. The dude has he's just an amazing prospect. He has great work ethic. He showed up in December earlier than everyone else to get some extra run in, and it worked because Volpe put in that work. He ended up breaking camp with the team because he earned it. Peraza having the being sent down, he has no more options. So if we see Peraza come up, he's going to be up to stay, or we see him get traded. So just keep a heads up there. I think both of his leash could be rather long. It should be. I don't think they just kept him up for a reason, obviously. But just something to keep in mind there in New York. I think DJ LeMahieu has no set lineup spot, by the way. He has no set position. But between Rizzo, Donaldson, Glaber getting days off, DHing, DJ LeMahieu is going to play probably 5 out of 6 games every week. He's going to lead off when he's in the lineup. He's rather undervalued, but in a shallower format, I don't see the point in rostering him just because he's kind of so meh. But anything 12 teams and deeper that has like a middle infield spot, especially 15s, he has a lot of value between that flexibility LeMahieu has, playing multiple positions, and having that solid skill and foreset. A little bit of power, a little bit of speed, batting average, we know is there. He's healthy. LeMahieu is a guy that becomes very intriguing the deeper the format you are in. Don't forget, if you are watching via YouTube, you can drop your questions in there. I will answer them. Otherwise, we are going to keep rolling forward. I appreciate those who are watching in general. Let's jump over to the Rays. Rays play Detroit. Beautiful matchup here. So you have, obviously, Erod's the only. And Turnbull is interesting. I'm not saying he's not nothing, but you have two lefties and a righty. This is kind of the matchup you want to be streaming from. So a guy like Isak Paredes, who's going to be playing every day, he becomes very interesting as a streamer this week. I saw a rumored or a projected lineup where he's gonna be batting fourth. That makes a lot of sense, but batting fourth against lefties, not all the time, against righties, he'll move down. It looks like him and Brandon Lowe and Nate Lowe, right? Or vice versa. I always forget those two, but Brandon Lowe should be moving up against righties, which we saw all spring. And Isak Paredes had like over 800 OPS last year against lefties. A 700 OPS against righties, so wasn't very good against righties last year. Former top prospect. A lot of upside here for power, too. And if Isak Paredes could just get going, he's going to play every day. It's just a matter of him holding on to the position against righties. So Paredes is going to at least three lineups. He should move up the lineup. He's a great streaming option in shallower formats. A must start in deeper formats. I think there's a lot to like here for Paredes. Other than that, you have your typical, two lefties. Harold Ramirez becomes interesting in deeper formats. Otherwise, not really interested because I don't think there's enough juice there for shallower leagues. I don't think we see a lot of Josh Lowe this week. If anything, it's Jose Siri this week. We got two lefties. But this is a team that it's just the playing time is going to be fluctuate. There's four outfielders deserving of playing time with only three spots. With Randy Rosarena kind of guaranteed that. So do not assume Randy Rosarena is going to be. So it is Brandon Lau, Okay, thank you for correcting this. Brandon Lau, Nate Lowe. See, what? I give up. It's not that I give up. I just get frustrated because, like, you just say these names so often, it's all over the place. Brandon Lau? I thought it was Nate. It's Nate Lowe. Brandon Lau. Yeah, I should know that. Nathaniel Lowe, at that. That's how his name is pronounced. I believe he prefers Nathaniel. At least that's the way it's written on everything I've seen. All right, Toronto. But, I mean, you're starting your Toronto guys. The only thing is here, St. Louis, they have one lefty on Sunday. So Brandon Belt could sit right here. That would be about it. You see San Diego Espinal probably get in there versus a lefty. Obviously, Whit Merrifield probably stays in there versus a lefty. Biggio won't slot in. Biggio could help here a little bit if someone needs a day off. I doubt anyone needs a day off, though. But ultimately, Brandon Belt and Varsho. I think Kiermaier is more likely to sit versus lefties than Varsho. They've shown in spring a little bit of Varsho slotting over to center, Espinal or Whit Merrifield in the outfield. So I think Varsho's safe. And on top of that being a catcher, you're not sitting Varsho anyway as a catcher. But yeah, so Brandon Belt would be the only name to really watch there. We talked about the White Sox. They, you know what they're doing. Colas, Elvis Andrews, those are just some deeper league guys. Colas, he's a fringe 12. I'd say he's worth having in a 12-team or three outfield league. That's where it gets tough. But anything deeper than three outfielder leagues in a 12, he's a guy to have. Cleveland against Seattle. Again, another lineup, you just know what you're getting. The only guy I'm really watching for, two righties, two lefties, I know Straw will play against lefties. I'm curious to see how Will Benson will factor in. Will Benson becomes a watch list guy, by the way, for all formats. I don't even think he's rostered in all 50. Will Benson's a guy, keep your name on him. Keep your mind on him in terms of a name to watch. But there's not really much juice there. Again, you're starting everybody in this lineup. I'm trying to think, maybe Mike Zunino, if you're desperate for a catcher, Mike Zunino is a guy. I know Brock this Monster last night on the Plazo podcast was talking him up. He really believes in him. I think Zunino's a poor man's Cal Raleigh, which is not bad considering Cal Raleigh is a top 12 catcher consensus wise. I think Mike Zunino can have a similar skill set. That's the lazy comp, but it's a very fair comp because the power is there, the swing and miss is there, playing time is there. That's kind of where I'm at with that situation. Detroit against the Rays, very tough first three starts. Eflin, Springs, McClanahan, great bullpen. I would try not to start any of the guys here if I can, outside of the obvious, the Javi Baez. If you really obviously Javi Baez, you're going to start and Riley Green. Other than that, Matt Vierling becomes a very, very, if you're desperate, stream. But Matt Vierling should be on most watch lists, not necessarily a streamer. But I have to get to the comments. But other than that, Matt Vierling being a streamer because there's two lefties, Matt Vierling should play against both of them. That means you're sitting Kerry Carpenter this week. Another guy, again, we're talking deeper formats here. These guys are being rostered in. Nick Matone's another guy to watch just to see the utilization. He is a lefty, so he might not lead off against lefties, but we saw him lead off a lot in spring. Matone should get a chance to lead off against righties, which we will get a quick look at right here against Eflin. I'm trying to read it in the comments here. LeMahieu, second base, Judge, center field, Rizzo, first base, Torres, Cabrera. I think, well, so Trevino's going to be out for a little bit with a four over the arm thing. So I'm wondering how that's going to turn out. But other than that, yeah, this lineup right here that you posted, if for those watching, I think this will happen most times. But then you have, I don't know. No, Torres isn't going to play third base, though. That's the problem. Torres, he doesn't have the glove or the arm, I think, for third base. He also couldn't handle shortstop. That's why I'm saying LeMahieu. That lineup was just posted? Wait, what? That lineup, Torres at DH. Oh, I read it. Donaldson at third. The way I read it was Torres at third base. Yes, Torres at DH. Okay, that makes a lot more sense. But yes, Cabrera. So yeah, Hicks, I told you. So already, like what I see here, I'll show it. Oops, wrong button. We are going to share the screen again. I apologize. We're going to share the screen and talk about it. But my point was that Oswaldo Cabrera. Look at that. Boom. Cabrera. Volpe. Trevino. I thought Trevino was, I swear I just read something that he was out until like late April. I don't know. Maybe I misread. Or maybe it was a different person. I swear. Either way, I don't mind. But my point was the main thing here, Cabrera, left field. No Aaron Hicks day one. I was sick of the Aaron Hicks talk. Everybody was talking about it, but Aaron Hicks not sitting and not starting day one. Good. He shouldn't be. He should be the fourth outfielder. Honestly, I got to take a victory lap already here. So let's get the Yankees lineup, see if it's posted here on Twitter. But yes, I got to take the victory lap. Not because I was necessarily right, but because just to make a point, like because people were worried about Hicks, and I think that this is the right answer here. So no Aaron Hicks as expected. Oswaldo season, baby. I think Oswaldo Cabrera is going to be a solid, solid player this year. I think he's going to be one of the most underappreciated fantasy assets. He was going late enough in drafts to be potentially a difference maker. I apologize a little bit early. So yeah, we're going to get back to these lineups here, though. So appreciate you dropping it, I'm surprised. I see that you said that too, DVS. I appreciate it. You're right. I heard that too, but looks like he's back. Talking about Trevino, exactly. But anyway, enough with the fantasy, enough with the victory lapping day one. I mean, it's only one day. I can't sit there and get excited. But it's also against a righty, so that's also a good sign, suggesting that Hicks, because Hicks, if anything, was as the lefty, would have been playing against more righties, but he's already sitting day one, as he should. So let's share this tab. Go back to here. So if more lineups drop, feel free to drop it. Locked on Marlins. Peter, appreciate it. Yeah, Oswaldo season. Dude, it's Oswaldo season. Let's go. Anyway, though, yeah, feel free to drop if another – don't drop the whole thing, but feel free to comment which lineups drop. We can talk about if that follows the trend of the spring and stuff like that, obviously considering what I do for content. Anyway, so we were on Cleveland mentioning how everyone is kind of just there. You know what you're getting. I am curious to see with Cleveland if they do – because last year they had a perfect platoon opportunity from the two spot. They liked Rosario out of the two spot. I understand that, but Andrés Giménez was beyond deserving of it, especially if you look at their splits. Giménez crushed righties. You had Rosario crushed lefties, and then vice versa on the splits. They both struggled against the opposing split. I don't know why that flip never happened. I think Rosario's going to get plenty of leash in the two spot, but Giménez has the opportunity to move up, especially if he can continue where he left off last year. Detroit, we talked about them. Oh, yeah, so we're on the Royals. So the Royals don't have anybody worth mentioning. You know, the usual suspects. You have, I guess, Hunter Dozier against three righties, though. So the lefty, Kyle Isbell, becomes interesting. Framil Reyes against three righties, not interesting. I don't know how much he's going to play in general. But ultimately, just Kyle Isbell would be the only name as a lefty on that lineup. Maybe trying. Oh, Michael Massey. He's already 15 team locked in as a middle infield type. 12 teamers, he's fringe. But watch his playing time. Watch if he moves up the lineup, because Michael Massey has a power and speed skill set. He can go 18 and 8, and no one should be surprised. We saw it in spring too. It flashed. Michael Massey, a name to keep on your watch list at the very least. Minnesota against Kansas City. This is where you want to stream, because we saw their lineup here. We'll share this tab, and their lineup's already up from yesterday. And boom, baby, Trevor Larnach, a name I dropped on Twitter the other day. He's batting cleanup. I did not see this coming. Gallo had been batting top four all spring. I'm glad to see Larnach getting a shot at cleanup. And Mac, my boy, one of my guys, my favorite players this spring, Max Kepler leading off. I was hoping he'd bat me in the middle lineup because I need home runs and RBIs from that spot. But Kepler leading off equals more plate appearances, equals more potential for fantasy juice. Shift is gone. He hits the ball hard. He has elite plate discipline. I love everything about Zach Greinke. And then he gets three righties this week. That helps him. Even Gallo becomes a streamer in 15s, but that definitely helps Kepler. Kepler is fringe 12 teamer. I don't think he has enough fantasy juice to break a 12 team roster outside of a fifth outfield spot. And even then, you're pushing it. For me, he's fringe top five. He's a fringe fifth outfielder and 12 teamer. And I love Max Kepler. I was higher on him than most this offseason. So we'll see how that works out. But Larnach. Larnach's a guy you need to have on your watch list. In every 12 and 15s, he should be an add. Larnach's a guy I really want plenty of. He should get plenty of run to start the year. And if he can keep it up, there's no reason why they can't put, obviously, Buxton back in center field and leave Larnach alone here in left. Unless they decide to put Gordon out there in left field when Polanco returns. So there's a lot of moving parts here at this lineup. But I think between days off and regular rest for players, Nick Gordon's going to play every day. Nick Gordon's a guy that already rostered 15s. Another watch list guy for you 12-teamers out there. If I'm looking for fantasy, for season long, I think I prefer Nick Gordon over Larnach. I think Larnach has more upside for power. Nick Gordon has an overall upside of batting average, speed, and power. So if you want somebody with just straight up juice, the guy that can hit 30, if he gets full playing time and makes it work, Trevor Larnach is your guy. If you want a guy who can go like 15-15 and with a little more potential for power, but most like 15-15 is actually a realistic outcome while hitting like 260, Nick Gordon is going to be your guy for that. So just keep those guys in mind. Those are names I really like this year. But Larnach's a guy that I fell on too late just because of all the injuries, kind of figuring out who's going to play. And Larnach looks like he's going to get his shot. Over to Houston. We talked about that being a mess. There's not really much there. And we talked about the four team schedule. So this becomes interesting. If you're in a weekly format, Ohtani becomes a guy that, do you start him as a, let me share this tab, sorry. Do you start him as a starter against Oakland, or do you hit him as a hitter? I think it depends. It's league specific. He is such an elite pitcher and hitter. He's getting great, great matchups, but he is facing two lefties. Not that he's a splits type of guy that you need to worry about, but Ohtani as a pitcher this week might get the edge even against a weak Oakland pitching staff, just because you're going to see Ohtani likely go six innings, strike out nine, and shut him out for those six innings, maybe give up one run on a fluke home run to Seth Brown or something. But yeah, I think as a starter, Ohtani might get the edge this week in weekly formats. In daily formats, you know what he is. He's elite. Plug him in everywhere he's playing. Like today, you're putting him in as a pitcher, then putting him right back there in the next game. But, yeah, so and in terms of this, two lefties. So two lefties means Rengifo I would say Luis Rengifo becomes very intriguing. Like over like 850 or 8 something OPS against lefties last year. It's like a 620 OPS against righties last year. These numbers, you could tell I've been doing my homework because all these numbers are top of mind. But Rengifo becomes very interesting in terms of a streaming option. Not a guy I'm adding, not a waiver wire claim, not even a watch, maybe a watch list guy. But even then, all these other names I've mentioned, like Larnick and stuff, I prefer over. I think that he's just a bench player. And I think Jake Lamb is going to play first base or at least factor into first base against righties in with Jared Walsh out. Meanwhile, Rengifo is not going to get much run against righties, at least initially. I'm not saying he can't. It might take an injury, but anyway, we have Oakland against – so we have righty, lefty, lefty. If you can just not start any hitters today, it'd be great. But in general, two lefties, not great for Seth Brown, not great for Ryan Noda, but maybe Connor Capel gets in there. But Connor Capel's also lefty. Capel's a guy that you should have in watch lists across the board. 15s, 12s, 15s though. 15-teamers, Connor Capel's a guy you have on your watch list. Power, speed, great, a good hit tool, solid play discipline. I think he's a guy you want to have more than not on your watch list. He's fringe on a bench. But again, we're talking deepest of 15 teamers. I drafted a main event that's a 15 team, five outfield type of league. So there's a 450 players rostered. And he's not one of them. Give you an idea of how deep we're going here. And is he worthy of a bench spot? Maybe, but it's going to depend on how playing time falls out. But against lefties, we can see some Nick Allen, two lefties here. We see Nick Allen. Ledmus Diaz will be interesting for daily leagues, DFS probably, because he should be – he might bat towards the top of the lineup. Ramon Laureano hits better against lefties too, if memory serves. So there's some juice here in this open lineup. I think it's been – and then we might even see – I wonder if we'll get Estuary Ruiz leading off against lefties, because last year Tony Kemp only led off against righties for majority of the year. So I'm wondering if there's some of that. Yes, Rengifo. I'm a big Rengifo. I'm not a Rengifo guy. I think he's just good against lefties. I think he's a lefty stream, but DVS said, love Rengifo too. Took Pepio deep a few nights back. Oh, dude, I love Pepio. Pepio is going to be a guy that just the strikeouts alone, he looks like he attacks the zone more this year. And all it was with Pepio was getting the ball and not walking. He made that improvement in spring. Let's see if it carries over. Pepio has like legitimate, like he's a guy you're streaming in 12s even. Pepio's a guy that I have a ton of, especially late in draft season. I made sure to get a hold of all of him. He's more 15 team relevant, but he's going to be a two-star. He's going to get a couple two-start weeks. He's going to get some decent matchups. I think he's a two-star pitcher next week. He is. And next week he gets Colorado at home and Arizona on the road. I'm not mad at those matchups. I think he's probably one of the best two-star pitchers. And that's why if you don't have him, you should be stashing him anyway. All right, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Two-star pitchers could be a whole other discussion. Let's get to the So Texas against Philly, Nola, Wheeler, Falter. These two matchups against righties are tough. And then the lefty, I wonder, I'm more so watching Garver. I know Garver should gain catcher eligibility. At least he has it. He makes for a good second catcher, especially in two catcher leagues. He's not quite one catcher league relevant just yet. So I wouldn't be adding him in one catcher leagues, in my opinion. But he's a watchlist guy. He could easily be relevant as a catcher, especially once he gains eligibility. Same thing with Langeliers, by the way. If you're in a league where Langeliers doesn't have eligibility at catcher, he will gain it. I like Langeliers more than Garver if you're ranking them. So those two guys are on your watch list because if they gain eligibility, they are worthy of your attention. I'm making sure I didn't miss anybody on my notes as we go through these. Oh, I did miss somebody. So Houston, going back to Houston, Yainer. I have no idea, I apologize. Diaz, he made the team. He should be the second catcher, so he should gain catcher eligibility because, you know, catchers play like 3 out of 5. He would be the next man up if they need somebody behind the plate as well. Diaz, big-time power upside. He showed it in the spring in minor leagues last year, hitting 25 home runs, good ISO numbers across multiple levels, and decent plate, like solid, like overall solid play discipline. I think that Diaz becomes a very, very intriguing guy in two-catcher leagues in deeper formats, not shallow league relevant. Diaz might even be worthy of a waiver wire claim in for like a couple bucks in like fab and stuff like that later on. It's a guy we'll get to. It's going to depend on his usage, honestly. making sure I didn't miss anybody else on my list here. No, we are good until we get to the NL, which we are creeping on to. So we have back to Texas, a guy like Bubba Thompson, stolen bases. That's it. He's going to play, but when Leody Tavares returns, he will not. And we have a question. Do you like Langeliers or Gabriel Moreno more in a mixed league? I think Moreno is the guy there. I think although Moreno has a little bit of pop, at least raw power, we've seen it in spring too show up. The game power has been lackluster. Moreno profiles will be very similar to Keibert Ruiz. So Kiper Ruiz being a top 15-ish catcher, Moreno, I would push him closer to the 12 spot, but just know that if he's closer or if he is a Kiper Ruiz light or very similar for the same player, don't be surprised. I think the upside might be overblown, but there is, it's not like there's not potential there for it. That's the thing. It's just a matter of how he profiles entering 2023 as Gabriel Moreno, as I and then as a backup. Oh, as a backup. I mean, if you're looking, if in daily formats, I don't use a bench spot for catchers personally. I think there's more juice on the waiver wire elsewhere for other positions. I'm more likely to just let kind of like fall by, like in Yahoo, you have like at max games. I try to make sure all my other max games are filled before, because catcher, there's the least amount of fantasy juice 99% of the time, unless you're lucky to happen onto like a guy, and we'll get to them later, but like a Blake Sable, who actually might be a difference maker at the position, but there's still a path to uncertainty there. Any more lineups released that we can break too quick? Let's refresh that page, because otherwise we're just gonna keep going down this team-by-team thing. And if you guys like this, by the way, let me know, because we can do this once a week, probably go through this type of matchup, talk streamers, talk waiver wire, just like this. I think this is very, very helpful. For those, again, listening to the replay, YouTube has all the video of it all happening. So youtube.com/@GTEFantasy. Quick plug there as we move on. So, yes, we talked about this tough matchup against with Texas, but we know their starting lineup. Again, it's just Bubba Thompson becomes intriguing in terms of like a deep league steal source, but it's going to be short-lived. Braves facing Washington. You have two lefties and a righty. So the name that pops here is Marcell Ozuna, being the lefty masher he is. He could slot right into the middle of the order against lefties. I know Sean Murphy's been there all spring. Ross Resource has Ozuna, and we've seen a lineup where Ozuna did bat cleanup. Ozuna has the power metrics were there last year, got a little unlucky if you look at the expected stats. Expected stats aren't the be-all, end-all, because you know teams learn how to play these players, especially guys that are slower like Ozuna. They'll play a little farther back in the infield, making him harder. He doesn't beat out infield hits, and they play defense differently against these guys. So there was a little bad luck there, though, last year for Ozuna. I think there could be some solid bounce back potential. Think of him in the same line. Like he's a better version of Larnick in terms of like, and the reason why I say Larnick is because the playing time should be there, but Larnick doesn't have they have the same power potential. Larnick just has a better path of playing time early on. Ozuna might need to earn more, because Ozuna it's kind of a tight squeeze there. They're going to have to fit Darno into DH spots. They have Rosario for left field or right field, wherever those two flip-flop. And then you have Ozuna factoring into DH to the field. I don't know Ozuna's role, whereas Larnick, we know his roles, but they have very, very similar skill sets. That's why it's like the comp is there. Ozuna just having the track record being the big difference. And he came in with the idea of trying to strengthen his arm so he could play the field better. All right, we can move on from Atlanta. That's kind of the only streamer. Orlando Arcia, if you're really desperate. I'm talking about deepest of formats, just because you know he's playing. Miami, we talked about Miami Mets. We can move on to the Phillies playing against Texas. DeGrom, Eovaldi, not a great start. Those are two tough, tough matchups there for the Phillies. But two righties equals Derek Hall. Derek Hall should be rostered in 15s, 12s. He's a fringe guy. He's a corner infield type. 30 home run upside, but anything over 20 would be nice. Decent plate approach. Does have some swing and miss, but in the spring it was really strong, so I don't know there. But yeah, so I wouldn't want to start him this week. He's a sit, considering the two tough righties, and then probably sit against lefties, where you have Alec Bohm, who could surprisingly play first base against lefties and probably move up the lineup because he's zone hit lefties really well. So Alec Bohm becomes a guy who can gain first base eligibility. We saw him play first base at the end of spring as well. There's a lot to like there for Alec Bohm. And Edmundo Sosa could obviously play against lefties and might even factor in against righties depending on how everyone else performs. But yes, Edmundo Sosa is a very deep league watch list guy, not being rostered or added anywhere. We can move on to the Nationals. Nationals against Atlanta. My one guy, like, this is a mess. You're sitting Dom Smith against two lefties. You're sitting Corey Dickerson against two lefties. What you are starting, or if you're taking a chance, because it's Max Fried, Spencer Strider, and Jared Schuster. If Schuster is even half as good as we saw in spring, the Nationals might score combined 3 runs. This series, and like even guys like I love Luis Garcia, but he's a sit this week against two lefties, and him being a lefty, he might not even play against both of them, although they might not have other options. It's just an ugly mess. Like, you don't want to start your lefties this week against them. So a guy like Alex Call comes to mind. Alex Call, 2 of 3 against two lefties here last year. 72 play appearances, very small, but hit 262 with an 867 OPS, 230 ISO, a 379 WOBA, and a 145 WRC plus. Very strong numbers, very small sample. Alex Call could easily platoon with Corey Dickerson, with Dom Smith. There's a path playing time. They kept him on as the fourth outfielder for a reason. Alex Call is a name to watch for DFS, but not a guy for season long because his path playing time, as of right now, appears to be on a short side platoon slash fourth outfielder role. Let's go to the Cubs. The Cubs, we have Evan Rios on watch list. They are facing righty, righty, lefty. Burns, Woodruff being the righties. Rios will play, I'm sure, against the righties. However, how good will he do? He could probably go 0-for. He could go with like 1-for-8 with like 6 Ks. Wouldn't surprise me. But Rios is a name to watch because if he's playing every day, he'll gain eligibility. Right now, util only in NFBC formats might have third base or first base where you play. But Rios is a guy that's 15 team only right now, and he's a strong side platoon bat. As at least that's the expectation. Should be batting strong side. But these matchups as a whole don't help him. It don't help anybody on this Cubs team this week. So it's kind of a team that, like, if you're torn between player X, player Y being, if you're like a Bellinger versus two righties, it's nice, but it's two very tough righties. Mancini, very tough righties. I have no problem seeing those guys this week because they're already kind of like your back end options anyway for most formats, most leagues, most teams. So if you can find a better matchup for the first short week, I would probably look to do so, just given these matchups. Very tough. Cincinnati facing Pittsburgh. You have Keller, Hill, Velasquez. I'd say that's a pretty good matchup there. Hill throwing like 85 on a good day. Velasquez, low 90s, but it's also opens Velasquez. And then Mitch Keller, he's very intriguing, but we've also seen Mitch Keller be intriguing in the past and get lit up. A lot of it goes down to the matchup too. They're in Cincinnati. So your TJ Friedels, your Fraley's, those guys become 12-team mixed relevant in terms of streaming options. Fraley is how I'd rank it. Fraley, Friedel, and then Benson. Benson's more of a watchlist guy in 12s. 15s, I mean, all these guys are rostered in 15s, and Benson should be rostered in 15. If not, get him on your bench today because Benson has power. He has a speed coming off a big spring, plays good defense. He should play as much as he can handle until Bottle returns. And by then, he could even push Friedel for a starting spot. So I don't want to sit there and say Benson, but Benson could be a season-long opportunity here. Going 2020 is not out of the question. It's going to come down to playing time. And that ballpark will play to all their strengths. That ballpark is where you want it to. This lineup as a whole, Cincinnati's lineup as a whole, has a lot of intriguing options. But those three guys all have a role entering the year and should have. And then the matchups against Pittsburgh, even if Mitch Keller shoves today, you should have two more pretty strong matchups. Just be wary that the lefty and Hill might cause maybe Friedel and or Benson to sit if they want to play matchups, get a righty bat in there. But that's fine. Like, who cares at that point, right? Like, at that point, I mean, you're attacking the matchup. You're attacking the ballpark. Milwaukee against Chicago. Interesting. I'm not sure. We don't know what to expect from Tyone. Tyone's been very solid in the past. Justin Steele was in the middle of what looked like to be a breakout last year in the second half, injured. The Cubs, it is what it is. The Brewers. The Brewers have a sneaky, I really like their lineup a lot. But we'll see how they utilize, what's his face? They just signed him. Luke Voit. They just signed Luke Voit. So you have Voit, who should play against lefties at least. And then Bryce Turang. I've obviously been very vocal about my love for Turang. He gets two righties this week in Stroman and Tyone. He's a 15-team guy that you're adding, but watch list otherwise. Don't go out of your way to add him. I do think there's definitely fantasy juice there. Unfortunately, he's likely to bat ninth in this lineup, eighth, ninth, seventh at best to start the year. But Bryce Turang becomes a guy that you want to have on your watch list in shallow leagues in case he pops. There's batting average, stolen bases. I think it's a matter of, will the power play up a little bit in Miller Park? I don't know what it's called anymore, but in Milwaukee. The comp here, because I'm not big on comps, but if I'm going to give a guy, like, I try to give fair comps. I think Bryce Turang comps very well to Gene Segura. So think about where Gene Segura is going in drafts or where he went in drafts. Think about what you're expecting from him in Miami. And Turang can give you a similar fantasy type of production. If you're getting 12-12 out of Turang with a decent batting average, that's very likely. Potential for more power, given the ball. Sorry, not so much power, but potential for more speed. I think he was like 32 for 34 last year on the base pass. Bryce Turang was. So Turang becomes a very interesting option in deep formats because he gives you speed. He should give you some decent batting average. And there's some pop there given the ballpark. And we saw a little bit on display in spring. He's not a zero, and it's kind of important. But I think Gene Segura is a very safe and fair comp. And Turang's going to gain second base eligibility entering the year with shortstop. He's going to play second base. This team against righties at the very least. We are on. Oh, and then, of course, guys, like, if Garrett Mitchell somehow is available in your 10-teamer, 12-teamer, add him. I like him a lot this year. Jesse Winker is more of a watch list guy for your shallower formats. Not a guy I've got on my way to add. And the rest are kind of, Brian Anderson becomes an interesting streamer type in deeper leagues, like 15s, just because he has playing time right now in right field. Frelick and Weimer should be your two watch list guys there. Across the board, those guys should be on all your watch lists, considering where you can, where they were both really close to making the cut for right field already. I know Tyrone Taylor is going to return, but they put Taylor in a fourth outfield role last year as well, so there's no reason why he can't return to that role. And one of those young guys come up and play right field sooner than later. and Garrett Mitchell has a little bit of leash there. You know, Christian Ehrlich is known to not stay healthy, Winker as well. So one of those two could open up playing time for these outfielders as well, or sooner than later if one of them gets injured or performance is poor for a guy like Winker. We'll see. But those are two guys you want to have on your watch list, being Sal Frelick and Joey Weimer. Pittsburgh, we're targeting, again, we're targeting the matchups. I think obviously McCutchen is a guy that's really strong stream this week. Three matchups. Obviously, he hits lefties better, but he's still going to play every day. It's kind of the point here. You're targeting plate appearances. And outside of O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds, the rest of this team is kind of just like plug and play. A guy that fits some watch list guys, Santana, Carlos Santana. I was thinking Carson. Like Carlos Santana becomes an interesting streamer this week. Again, given the matchups, given the potential for playing time, I see the way they've been treating him all spring has been as the cleanup hitter in every regular lineup. So I think we have a decent streaming option there in deeper formats. Not even a watch list guy in anything shallower than 50. Guy like Kanaan Smith and Jigba, he becomes intriguing because he actually had a strong finish to spring, should enter the season with a role in right field. And we've seen him have some fantasy relevance. And again, this is a 15-team guy you're looking to add this week if you're desperate, or at least on your watch list, just because if he comes up hot, we know the role could be his. And like, sometimes it's just as simple as let's get some playing time. Let's get this. The path of playing time is what you want here. And then I'm trying to think what else. Swinski's a watch list guy in shallower formats, but in deeper leagues, he's already rostered. Big power upside, big strikeout potential, and not in a good way because he's a hitter. trying to think if there's anybody else. Jiwon Bae, I think, is – I gotta look it. I'm gonna look it up real quick. Not how to say it part, but just if I even said the right name. I know the last name is Bay. Bay becomes an interesting. Yeah, I think it's G1 Bay. He becomes interesting just because as a lefty, he could platoon with Castro at second base. We saw Bay, both him and Castro both were bad last year, bad in spring. So we'll see how those two battle it out. Neither one had a lot of relevance outside of daily formats. Nat's lineup is up. Thank you, DVS. I appreciate you watching the whole stream, by the way, and commenting. So it's what we expect, except for Dom Smith is batting fourth, but that's probably because there's a lefty on the mound, and they're going to go righty-righty to start against lefty here, but that's exactly how you expect. Oh, there's my boy Alex Call. What a call. Sorry, too easy and stupid. But, him and Corey Dickerson could be in a natural platoon right now. Here's my boy Luis Garcia. Garcia is a guy who's going to probably play every day, even though, again, two lefties. But I think against righties, we see him slot six. Either way, 6-7, Abrams is going to bat the bottom with Robles. This bottom lineup's really bad. So if Garcia can get on base even half as much as I expect him to be able to, I think Garcia could be a sneaky 10 stolen base guy, 15 to 20 home run. He has the power. It's last year, like 91st percentile max exit velocity. And we saw him hit an absolute nuke off of Scherzer in spring. Garcia, in deeper leagues, it's rostered. In shallower leagues, he's a guy you're going to want to have on your watch list. Add him if he starts off hot, or stash him if he doesn't. I appreciate you. Oh, you're working from home. Yeah, I see what you're saying, working DVS. Yes, because you have me and MLB Network on. I like to think I'm giving more insightful information to MLB Network these days, man. Some of the stuff you say, maybe not MLB Network necessarily, but ESPN and stuff, man. This stuff is so bad for the sport. They need to get some of us degenerates on that really care about baseball. And obviously not me. I'm not a TV personality, but I mean, I can be. Look at me. I'm willing to do this on a public forum. Why not get me on somewhere that could make fun of it and utilize it? Anyway, last division before we call it a wrap. And I think I have some names just to make sure. Names here. Connor Capel, we mentioned. Astros second base job we're watching. Yes, I am not as good on the eyes as a Lauren type. But you know what? This is beautiful. I don't care what you say, this face is beautiful. Anyway, sorry, getting into it with the commenters. I appreciate the comments on YouTube. Trust me, I do. We have to get into the final. So we have the Giants. We already talked about the other four teams in here, the Arizona Diamondbacks, Rockies, Dodgers, and Padres. So let's talk the Yankees. So they get Cole, Schmidt, Herman. Not the easiest three, but you know what you're getting? A lot of lefties, which plays into the favor of a Blake Sable. He is a lefty bat. He can play catcher. He'll probably play some catcher to start the year behind Joey Bart. But then also he can DH. He can play the outfield. I think Sable could probably play 2 out of 3, maybe even 3 out of 3. As a second catcher, he should already be rostered in 15-teamers. If not, as a second catcher, get him. He's a watchless guy for sure across the board just because catcher, every year there's always a guy or two that pop. And he could be that guy that gains up, that has catch eligibility or gains it if he doesn't have it in your league for some reason. And he could easily be relevant in any format, single catcher formats even. Blake Sable, a name to know if you don't. And a guy that's worthy of streaming this very week. That's all 30 teams. I have no more questions. Let's see if any more lineups posted before we get out of here. Otherwise, I'm going to call it quits on this stream and get to prepping for the day and go making sure my lineups get set properly. I appreciate those who hung out with me. Those who are listening, don't forget to check it out on YouTube again if you want to see the visual behind it all. But we're going to try to do this at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. So those who watch, I appreciate it. Those who are listening, thank you again. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. And until next time, it's opening day. Let's have some fun and we'll talk soon.